When not sleeping or studying, Thetans were fond of video games, constructing and solving elaborate puzzles, playing, inventing, and reimagining board games, and pretending to kill one another as part of live-action mafia games. They ate communal meals prepared by a cook named Karen, and had a variety of wry, nerdy traditions, like not coffee, defined as a weekly study break with tasty snacks that in general are not coffee, and stereo wars, a contest of loudness before the start of finals. Sasha was the only non-binary person in the house, but in response to their request, the house changed the names of the gendered bathrooms, known as heads in a linguistic carryover from E.T.'s Navy days, to Men's Plus and Women's Plus. Anyone who doesn't exclusively identify as male can use the women's head, and anyone who doesn't exclusively identify as female can use the men's head, Sasha explained. By this definition, Sasha could use both. When Sasha came home for vacation, they proudly wore an Epsilon Theta sweatshirt. It was a little hard to tell that it was an ET sweatshirt, though, since both the letters and the sweatshirt were the exact same shade of purple. They were happy at MIT. They'd found their people, and they liked their classes. As for the fire, it was already a distant memory. Few people at MIT even knew it had happened. How it ended up. Cherie sits in a cafe in Oakland, drinking a smoothie and talking about the old days, back when she and Richard were 14. She's wearing a turquoise tie-dyed t-shirt, jeans, and gold hoop earrings. Her hair is waist-long and gleaming, her jewelry glittery, her skin flawless, except for the streaks made by the tears streaming down her face. "It was kind of fucked up that we were out there fighting and cutting school," she says. "Let me just say that it was karma, you know. We should have been doing what we were supposed to be doing, because look how it ended up for us." She ticked the outcomes off on her fingers. Skeet was dead. Ashley was a mom. Hadari and Jesse were serving time in the state penitentiary. Richard had been convicted of a felony. She and Day were the last ones standing. They were both 18, but so far neither of them had graduated from high school. They weren't giving up on those diplomas, but they had a lot of catching up to do. "It's just a sad story," she says. "When you think about it, it's just hella sad." Mail delivery. In January 2015, Sasha finally received the two letters Richard had written 14 months earlier. "I sympathized with him a lot reading his letters," Sasha said. "It was definitely really moving, seeing his perspective." Debbie and Carl read the letters, too. "I'm kind of bummed that I didn't see them a year ago," Carl said. "It would have made a difference," Debbie said. "I would have been more engaged in what was going on with Richard, I think. For him to say, 'I did wrong and I'm sorry and I hope you get better,' that meant a lot to me." She sighed. "If I'd read the letters, I would have had a different speech to give to him." Chad. On January 2, 2015, Richard left Alameda County Juvenile Hall in the back of a Crown Vic cage car and traveled an hour and 20 minutes by freeway to Stockton, California. From there, the car motored down a long straight road with plowed furrows and rows of trees on the left, brown grass on the right, through a gate topped by razor wire, into a complex of low-slung white buildings with pitched blue roofs. This was N.A. Chadurjian Youth Correctional Facility, known as CHAD, home to some 230 males ages 18 to 25. Opportunity. From the Youth Rights Handbook, distributed by the Division of Juvenile Justice. After considering all the options, a decision was made by a juvenile or adult court to commit or house you with the Division of Juvenile Justice, DJJ. Now that you are here, you may experience a feeling of anxiety or fear. This handbook was created to help you understand your rights, what to expect while housed in a facility of DJJ, answer some commonly asked questions, and provide useful information to help you while at DJJ. DJJ would like to see you successfully complete your stay and end your involvement with the criminal justice system. A number of our youth do well here and never find themselves in trouble again. When this happens, everyone benefits, and most importantly, you. Think of your time here as an opportunity rather than a punishment, and take advantage of all there is to offer. If you do this, there is no doubt that you will succeed and be better prepared when you are released into the community. Basic necessities. You have the right to be provided with the basic things you need to live and stay healthy. Basic necessities include the right to healthy food, sleep, exercise, a daily shower, medical services, reading material, contact with your parents, guardians, and attorney, clean water, bedding, a drinking fountain, a toilet, access to religious services, send and receive mail. Once you arrive at a reception center or facility, you will be provided clean, basic, state-issued clothing and sufficient personal hygiene items. You will shower daily and are provided with soap, shampoo, towels, toothbrush, toothpaste, and other hygiene supplies. You may also choose to purchase other clothing and hygiene items through canteen. Some items available at canteen may include clothing, pants, sweatshirts, thermals, name-brand shoes, food, snacks and soft drinks, hygiene, lotion, hair products, makeup for female youth, electronics, MP3 player, and Walkman. Contraband. There are a number of items that are prohibited. Here are just a few. Cigarettes, tobacco, controlled substances, drug paraphernalia, drugs, gambling or lottery materials, gang writing or materials, money, sexually explicit drawings, pictures, prints, etc., weapons or explosives, cell phones, PDAs, pagers, etc. Searches. You have the right to be searched in a way that is least embarrassing to you. Searches are necessary to provide safety for you and others in your facility. There are different types of searches. Property or room searches. Staff may search your room or possessions for contraband or evidence. Property and room searches should be conducted in your presence whenever possible. Staff will look through your clothing, bedding, books, and all other belongings that are in your room. Pat-down search. Clothed pat-down searches are conducted on a routine basis and are done in certain instances, like when a youth is leaving a vocational shop. Skin searches. Skin searches require you to remove your clothing. This will be conducted with maximum concern for your privacy, and only peace officer or licensed medical staff of the same sex as you shall be present or participate in the search. Should you be suspected of concealing contraband in your rectal or vaginal area, a rectal or vaginal search may be conducted. This type of search will be performed by a licensed medical staff. Then and now. 10 years ago, California had 10,000 incarcerated juveniles in 11 state facilities and 6 camps. Today, the number hovers around 700, distributed among 3 facilities and 1 conservation camp, where low-risk youths do fire suppression work. Only hardcore offenders come to Division of Juvenile Justice facilities. Kids convicted of violent crimes and sex offenses. Youths convicted of less serious crimes serve their time in county juvenile halls or group homes, or by remaining in the community while wearing GPS ankle monitors that track their movements. Most of the young people in DJJ facilities were tried in juvenile court, and those who go through adult court usually wind up in adult prisons. Offenders who come here generally stay 2 or 3 years. Chad has 12 living units, only 9 of which are currently being used. They are arranged in a semicircle around a scrubby grass expanse where the youths play softball, touch football, soccer. It's blisteringly hot in the summer, bleakly cold in winter. The views are dreary. A bare brown hill, a chain-link fence, searchlights stacked on a pole. Yet despite the horrid weather, the squat sameness of the buildings, and the severity of the youth's offenses, Chad doesn't feel like a terrible place. The atmosphere is relaxed and informal, more like a school than a prison. Youths go to class, attend vocational programs, work at on-site jobs, take part in cognitive behavioral counseling groups. They complain about being tired from work and from school, but they don't complain about being bored. 10 years ago, Chad was a very different place. In August 2005, an 18-year-old named Joseph Daniel Maldonado hung himself with a bedsheet from the upper bunk of his room at Chad's Pajaro Hall. He had spent the previous 8 weeks confined to his room close to 24 hours a day and had been denied mental health services despite his repeated requests. It was the 5th suicide at a California juvenile facility in as many years. Back then, California's juvenile facilities were notoriously harsh, violent, dilapidated, dull, and overcrowded, with young wards routinely subjected to solitary confinement, and some forced to exercise and attend classes while locked in cages. Use of physical force and psychotropic drugs was rampant. Violence hung about the place like a bad smell. Classes were frequently canceled due to a shortage of teachers. Jobs were hard to come by, and vocational programs were minimal. Correctional officers had the power to punish young inmates by adding time to their sentences, with the result that California juveniles were locked up almost 3 times longer than the national average. Even once they were released, California youth seemed unable to escape from the prison's grasp. More than 80% returned to state custody within 3 years of getting out. A 2003 lawsuit, Farrell versus Harper, led to wholesale reform. This is not a system that needs tinkering around the edges. This is a system that is broken almost everywhere you look, a panel of state-approved correctional experts concluded in 2006. Later that year, the panel issued a plan for the complete restructuring of California's juvenile facilities. It took time and continual pressure from reformers to implement the plan. But in fewer than 10 years, California's juvenile facilities went from being some of the worst in the nation to some of the best. They don't throw people in the hole very much. The violence is way down. The satisfaction of the staff and the kids is way up, says Don Spector, executive director of the nonprofit Prison Law Office, which filed the original lawsuit in 2002 and has been tracking the state's progress ever since. It's a totally different place. Instead of focusing exclusively on punishing bad behavior, staff now track and reward good behavior. Youths get positive checks for complying with the rules, but also for using the interpersonal skills necessary to do well on the outside, skills like asking for help or talking through a conflict. Behave well all day, and you can stay an hour later in the common areas instead of having to return to your room at 8 p.m. Do well all week, and you snag candy, chips, or soda from the incentive locker. A month of good behavior wins you an invitation to a pizza or nacho party. And if you do well for long enough, you can apply for a week-long stay in one of 2 incentive rooms, cells that have been converted into mini man caves with DirecTV, video game consoles, comfy, colorful bedding, and, of crucial importance in stiflingly hot Stockton, a fan. Risky thinking. Let me ask you, Ricky Lindsay said, do you have risky thoughts going on throughout your day? Lindsay, a parole agent at Chad, was addressing Richard and a half dozen other young men in a small meeting room inside Chad's Feather Hall, the living quarters for the facility's lowest-risk, best-behaving youths. It was late afternoon. The young inmates had completed school and work for the day. Now they had just one more obligation before dinner. Counterpoint, a cognitive behavioral program designed to teach problem-solving and perspective-taking. Fear of getting in trouble, offered a young man in a white T-shirt. He tipped his chair back against the whiteboard behind him. The room, bare except for an easel, wasn't much larger than a walk-in closet. Richard sat quietly, elbows on his knees, listening. What would get you in trouble, though? Lindsay asked. He was a genial fireplug of a man who spoke informally, like someone from the neighborhood. Like behavior. What kind of behavior gets you in trouble? Anger. What makes you angry? Rage. What makes you rageful? Come on. Disrespect. When you feel disrespected, how does that make you feel? It hurts. It hurts? What does it make you want to think? My feelings be like wanting me to react, the young man said. Justification, another youth offered. He had short hair, and his confident manner signaled that he'd been around a while. Why would that go to risky thinking? Most people don't think before they act, the youth with glasses explained. I think, but with that thinking, I still try to justify what I'm going to do. I'm a little stubborn with my thinking. Lindsay nodded as if to say, now we're getting there. Risky thinking, he said. All of you are here for a reason, right? I'm going to say that all of you are here because of some risky thoughts you had. Maybe I shouldn't have went to the store that night. Maybe I shouldn't have jacked that guy that night. Maybe I shouldn't have had a fight with that guy that night, right? Maybe I shouldn't have had that pistol on me that night, right? Just saying. Or is it because you didn't think about it? Another kid suggested. He wore a black windbreaker and had a sardonic edge to him. It could be, Lindsay agreed. Other guys be under the influence. Not being fully aware of your surroundings can be risky thinking because you're not in your right state of mind. How do you know it's a risky thought? Doubt, said a youth whose hair was pulled back in a ponytail. He leaned forward and rested his elbows on his knees, his eyes on Lindsay. Doubt, Lindsay repeated. Explain. When your conscience tells you it's bad, you know you ain't supposed to do it. Your conscience, Lindsay said. That little angel and that little devil. And you listen to the bad one, the ponytailed kid said. The good one is the one you're supposed to listen to. The good one is the one that's basically, that's you. The good one is giving you that gut feeling, offered the kid with the black-framed glasses. He's saying, you're sure that's the right thing to do? Lindsay agreed. So you got a good dude and a bad dude. Which one are you going to listen to? I think I got two bad dudes, said the boy in the black windbreaker. He grinned. Lindsay laughed. It's different for everybody. He handed out a sheet of paper listing different kinds of risky thinking. Overgeneralizing. What's that? You always blame it on me, the kid with the glasses said, playing the role of the overgeneralizer. Staff's always trying to get me. You always give me negative checks. Lindsay nodded. There you go. He ran through some other categories. Catastrophizing. That was one kid's grandma, always sure the worst was going to happen. Desperate and deserving. You're like, I need this, or I have a right to this, somebody offered. Uh-oh, Lindsay said. Sort of entitlement, someone else suggested. Man, why can't I ever have this? Ah, Lindsay raised his eyebrows, asking for more. Ain't I a good person? Don't I deserve to have this? Man, I've been working this job for 5 years. I still don't have this? A discussion ensued. Was desperate and deserving just a way that poor people thought? Rich people can't be desperate and deserving. What are you talking about? One kid scoffed. They can be hella rich and they can be like, I deserve to have a wife. And you start to feel hella bad for yourself, the ponytailed kid said. Like some people got so much money, but they don't have nobody. Yeah, but I'd rather be them than be here, the sardonic kid said. He folded his arms across his chest. Everybody nodded. Progress Report. Sasha stood in the hallway outside Department 11, wearing a vest, button-up shirt, and bow tie paired with a long skirt and ballet flats. Over their shoulder they had slung a canvas purse decorated with pins. LGBTQ Class of 2018, read one. Another said simply, they, them, there. They'd cut their hair short and shaved it on one side. The ends were dyed fluorescent pink. Debbie and Carl stood beside Sasha. They, too, were dressed in their courtroom best. A purple jersey dress for Debbie, pleated slacks, a pink checkered shirt, and a tie for Carl. Carl had topped his outfit with his Outback hat, the same one he'd used to cover Sasha the day Sasha was burned. It was the last Friday in June 2015. The family had come to court for Richard's second progress report, the one that would determine whether he was eligible for resentencing. Richard had passed the first hurdle with flying colors. He'd had no disciplinary violations, and the staff at CHAD had described him as motivated to participate in treatment programs and remorseful about his crime. If his second progress report was equally positive, he could be resentenced to 5 years instead of 7. The elevator opened and Jasmine stepped out, wearing jeans and high tops and a black-and-white shawl-collared jacket. She hugged all three members of Sasha's family and took a seat, exhaling sharply. The strain was gone from her face, and she was smiling, but she was tired, too, having recently taken on a second job. After completing her shift at the convalescent home, she now worked a 4-hour shift at the supermarket, often not getting off work until 1 a.m. Every Sunday, she drove 3 hours round trip to visit Richard. Getting the time off to come to court hadn't been easy. Her boss had turned down her request, but she had managed to quietly trade shifts with a co-worker. Now there was another problem. Richard's court file had somehow been misplaced, which meant that the judge couldn't review the record. The case would have to be continued until the following week. Jasmine's shoulders slumped. I can't get more time off, she whispered. She kept talking for a moment, but then her voice trailed off. I'm smiling, but I'm crying inside, she admitted. She was cycling through the options in her mind. How could she get there? Who else could come? The case file mishap wasn't just a problem for Jasmine. Sasha's family wanted to address the court, but they were leaving for vacation the next day. They wouldn't be around next week. After some discussion, Judge DeLucci agreed to let them make their statement. He beckoned Carl to the front of the room. The parties now stood before the judge, like a couple standing before the altar. Carl, with Deputy District Attorney Scott Ford at his side, Richard with Bill Dubois. In the year and a half since it all began, Richard had grown taller than Dubois, his shoulders broader. He watched Carl, his expression neutral. Carl cleared his throat and unfolded a sheet of paper. I am speaking on behalf of my wife, Debbie, and our child, Sasha. Thank you for the opportunity to have our voices heard, he began. The courtroom fell silent. In the week following the fire on the bus, Richard wrote 2 letters to Sasha, in which he took full responsibility for his actions and asked for forgiveness. Unfortunately, it took 14 months for those letters to reach us. When we finally read them, we were moved to tears. The letters gave us a clearer picture of who Richard is, and we wished we had been able to see them before Debbie spoke at the sentencing hearing. As he listened, Richard's jaw worked, the muscles tensing and relaxing, his lips pulled to one side. I believe Richard when he says he meant no bodily harm to Sasha, Carl continued. But I also believe that Sasha would not have been a target if Sasha had been wearing jeans. He described how other kids on the bus had laughed, even as Sasha's clothes went up in flames. We wish for Richard and those other kids to learn empathy towards those who are different. We hope that there are programs in juvenile detention that can at least help Richard with this, and that he can become an ally who will stand up against the bullying and hatred of gay and trans people. It was so quiet in the courtroom that you could hear the flutter of Carl's breath as he tried to steady his voice. From the start, we have been opposed to Richard's being tried as an adult, he said. His actions appear to have been impulsive, immature, and unpremeditated. He did make a big mistake and recognizes that. He asks for our forgiveness. Carl's voice broke. Sasha, Debbie, and I have forgiven Richard, he whispered. We hope the state will focus more on preparing him for the world beyond incarceration than on punishing him. When Carl raised his eyes from the paper clenched in his hands, he saw Richard watching him. Thank you, Richard mouthed. At the back of the courtroom, the ladies were red-eyed and sniffling. Given that the sentence allows the court a pretty fair amount of discretion, I do not take your words lightly, Judge DeLucci said. Then he continued the case to the following Tuesday. A level of maturity. The record should reflect that the court has read the fairly voluminous records that have been provided, Judge DeLucci said when Richard returned to court the next week. It was a positive report, the judge noted. Richard was attending school, participating in treatment, and had expressed interest in getting a job at the facility. He hadn't had any disciplinary actions. The staff noted that he was reserved and quiet and tended to keep to himself, but they commended him for limiting his interactions so that he is not drawn into too much negativity. All in all, DeLucci told Richard, the report indicated a level of maturity that you didn't exhibit on the day of the offense. In addition, he continued, Sasha's family has made it clear what their position is, and that should be considered. With that, he modified Richard's sentence from 7 years to 5 years. With credit for time served, he would be out just before his 21st birthday. It was his recommendation that Richard serve the totality of that time in the juvenile system. Jasmine's boss had given her the day off to attend the hearing. When it was over, she stood smiling in the hallway, looking slightly dazed. It's still a long time, she said. 3 years. She had spent the weekend with her cousin Regis, attending the San Francisco LGBT Pride celebration. Now she was planning to take advantage of the rare day off and do some errands. First on the list, wash her car. It's such a release, she said in the elevator. She leaned her head back against the wall and raised her eyes to the ceiling before correcting herself. Relief. Andrew and the Binary. 5 months after Richard was sentenced, Andrew and Sasha got together for dinner at a Latin American cafe in Berkeley. They hadn't seen each other much over the previous couple years, but now Sasha was in town for winter break, and they were getting together for the second time in as many weeks. They'd already had that initial, "What are you up to these days?" conversation, and over dinner they just talked, the way they used to, about the world and what it was and what it should be. They talked about revolution versus reform, and anarchism versus socialism, and Andrew was struck, as he always had been, by the way Sasha carefully considered things instead of just echoing the opinions of other people. Andrew was 18 now. His glasses were rimless at the bottom, his nose pierced at the septum. He identified as a gay man. Few people knew his trans status. He kept it on the down low. Yet when straight men treated him like a bro, He felt a familiar sense of disorientation. For how vehemently I felt like I wasn't a girl, I have to say, being a boy isn't super great either, he admitted. Both sides have such bullshit baggage attached to them. If being a man meant always having to act confident and never being able to admit feeling sadness or self-doubt, it was just as much of a trap as being a woman was. He was happier now than he'd been before he transitioned, but he still yearned for something else, someplace outside of gender. Actually, he said, I'm starting to identify a little bit as... I don't even know the word I want to use yet. I like androgynous. I like genderqueer. What held him back? Fear. Fear of other people's judgments, their questions, their hostility, their fascination. Because I fall neatly within the binary, I feel comfortable right now, he explained. But if I were to radically shift my appearance in a way that was more androgynous, I don't know how comfortable that would be for me. I mean, I've already been asked enough questions about my genitals. I'm just done with that. Birthdays. Richard turned 18 in Alameda County Juvenile Hall just before being transferred back to Chad. Individual birthdays aren't celebrated in Juvenile Hall, so it was a day exactly like any other day. Richard was used to that by now. He hadn't spent a birthday at home since he'd turned 14. His 15th, 16th, 17th, and now 18th birthdays had all been spent locked up. Back at Chad, Richard earned his high school diploma and then began taking vocational classes, earning certificates in programs like irrigation design and forklift driving. He worked in the barbershop for a while, then got a job working for Free Venture, an environmentally certified nonprofit that refurbishes and recycles e-waste on site. At Free Venture, he earned $9.70 an hour, which allowed him to start paying off the $2,100 he'd been fined as part of his plea bargain, and also deposit money into a savings account for his eventual release. It was one of the best jobs at the facility, and one of the hardest to get, but Richard was doing exceptionally well. He had already attained incentive level A, the highest incentive level a young inmate could achieve, and he was housed among other low-risk youths in a hall where the atmosphere was generally relaxed. In the evenings, kids watched TV or played ping-pong and dominoes in the day room, or settled in to make phone calls at one of the two payphones. Richard held himself a bit aloof, slow to trust, slow to warm. He didn't smile much. Each night, he returned to a 6-by-8-foot cell with a metal sink and toilet. On his desk, he kept a Bible, some folded paper crafts, and a television he had purchased with money he'd earned at Free Venture. Neat rows of family snapshots were taped to the wall. All the people he loved the most, bright-eyed, grinning, frozen in time. He slept in the lower berth of a metal bunk bed. The top berth had no mattress, and he used it to display the vocational and educational certificates he'd earned at Chad, the squares of colored paper arranged in orderly lines. Beside them, he placed a printout of the poem Invictus by William Ernest Henley. Out of the night that covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeonings of chance, my head is bloody, but unbowed. He had another two birthdays still to celebrate behind bars, his 19th and his 20th. Sometime before his 21st, a Crown Victoria Cage car would take him back to Alameda County Juvenile Hall, where he would be processed and then released. After that, he would finally complete the journey home he began on the afternoon of November 4th, 2013. After that, the next chapter of his life would finally begin. "1001 No Longer Blank White Cards." In January 2016, just before going back to school for their sophomore years of college, Sasha and Michael got together at Maybeck to play the index card game. The game was still fun, the in-jokes still funny, even if some of the references had been lost in the mists of time. Sasha could still effortlessly layer a lisp over a Russian accent when the cards required it. Michael still wore a gray beanie, which was good because there was still a card that said, "Steal Michael's beanie." "Have you ever heard of a little word called they?" Sasha remarked after pulling Lunesta sleeping pills, a card that used he-she pronouns. Player must play with his-her forehead on the table. It was an old line, one that dated from when Sasha was first trying to get people to remember gender-neutral pronouns. Except now it was a joke instead of a reminder. Nobody needed reminding except the card, which had been written before Sasha was Sasha. A couple of days earlier, Michael and Sasha had digitally scanned the full stack of index cards for posterity. As they went through the deck, they'd paused over the ones that mentioned someone named Luke. One featured a drawing of a pen and a bottle of ink. "Luke's fountain pen," it said. "Draw a card." It was kind of a weak pun, not nearly as good as many of the cards that came later. But after talking it over, the two decided to leave the Luke cards in the deck. After all, Sasha said, they were part of the historical record. A lot had changed since the beginning of high school, including Sasha's name, pronouns, and style of dress. But in all the important ways, Sasha was still Sasha. They still loved cats, cartoons, games, and hats. And they were still, as they'd once written on their blog, "the biggest bus nerd you will ever meet." Now that love of buses had become an academic focus. They had decided to major in urban planning and hoped to eventually get a job designing or improving public transit systems. "I might take public transit, even if I wasn't in love with it," Sasha explained. "But the reason I'm studying it is because I have this personal love for it." That love, well, you could ask Sasha to explain it, but you'd be wasting your time. They could no more explain loving buses than they could explain loving the color purple. "I'm an autistic kid with a special interest," Sasha said, and smiled. "That's probably the best answer I can give." Some gender neutrality milestones. 2007. Nepal's Supreme Court orders the government to issue citizenship ID cards that allow people to describe themselves as third gender or other. 2013. Australia gives citizens a choice of three official genders, male, female, and X. Germany gives parents a choice of three gender options when filling out a newborn's birth certificate, male, female, and indeterminate. 2014. Facebook begins allowing users to self-identify as something other than male or female. Denmark gives its citizens the choice of three official genders, male, female, and X. 2015. The White House designates a gender-neutral bathroom for visitors and staff. Target announces they are removing gender-based signs from their toy and furnishings aisles. Malta and Nepal join the list of countries offering their citizens the choice of an official third gender. The Oxford English Dictionary adds the gender-neutral prefix "mix" to its lexicon as an alternative to Mr., Ms., Mrs., and Miss. It also adds the word cisgender. Disney removes the gender categories from its Halloween costumes. The Washington Post updates its style manual to allow writers to use the pronoun they to refer to an individual, calling it the only sensible solution to English's lack of a gender-neutral third-person singular personal pronoun. The American Dialect Society chooses the singular gender-neutral pronoun they as their word of the year. Amico Gabriel Blue, a resident of Ashland, Oregon, goes to court to legally change their gender to neutral. The request is denied, but afterward the judge tells a reporter, "I would have been happy to do it if I thought it was legal." 2016. North Carolina passes the Public Facilities Privacy and Security Act, requiring people to use public bathrooms according to the biological sex on their birth certificate. Merriam-Webster adds the words cisgender and genderqueer to the dictionary. The Obama administration directs the nation's schools to provide students with access to bathrooms and locker rooms that match their chosen gender identity. A retired U.S. Army sergeant named Jamie Shoup receives permission from an Oregon court to legally change their gender to non-binary, becoming the first U.S. person to do so. 2017. After losing, according to PolitiFact, an estimated $500 million in revenue and the chance to host the 2017 NBA All-Star Game, North Carolina lawmakers vote to repeal the state's Public Facilities Privacy and Security Act, known as the Bathroom Bill. But while the replacement legislation eliminates the requirement that people use the bathroom for the gender they were assigned at birth, it keeps state legislators in charge of future bathroom policies. The Trump administration eliminates the Obama administration guidelines that directed schools to provide transgender students with access to bathrooms and locker rooms matching their gender identity. The Showtime drama Billions introduces Taylor, television's first non-binary character. The MTV Movie and TV Awards become the first major acting awards to eliminate gendered categories for performance. Emma Watson won the all-inclusive category Best Actor Award, which was presented by non-binary actor Asia Kate Dillon. Some numbers. U.S. juvenile incarceration. Figures are the most current available as of 2016. Number of juveniles held in correctional facilities on any given day, 54,148. Average cost of juvenile incarceration for one 12-month stay, $146,302. Percentage of juveniles who are African American, 16. Percentage of incarcerated youths who are African American, 41. Percentage of African American youths who do their time in adult prison, 58. Number of people currently serving life sentences without the possibility of parole for crimes committed as juveniles, 2,570. Cost of incarcerating one juvenile for life, $2.5 million. Percentage increase in the likelihood that a person will be incarcerated as an adult if they've been incarcerated as a juvenile, between 22 and 41. Percentage of confined youths who have witnessed someone severely injured or killed, 70. Percentage of confined youths who report having been physically or sexually abused in their lifetime, 30. Percentage of confined youths who have been sexually assaulted while in custody, 9.5. Percentage of confined youths who have attempted suicide, 22. The End. This book was read for you by Robin Miles, a member of SAG-AFTRA. We hope you have enjoyed this production of The 57 Bus by Dashka Slater. Recorded Books offers a wide selection of bestsellers, mysteries, classics, histories, and more. So look for us at your public library or on download sites online. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.